Very good evening to you. Friday night, 7 o'clock. It's that time again. It's time for us here at Revival Football. Coming to you live from the studios in Cumbernauld at 100.8 Revival FM. Talking football this week, as always, what else would we do on a show called Revival Football? Looking at Celtic's dramatic exit from the Europa League. Okay, it's maybe no dramatic, it was maybe expected. But to get down 2-1 at home to a side struggling in the Norwegian League. Scottish football is in a heck of a state. We might even talk EBTs. On social media this week, Celtic fans have been glorying in the fact that Rangers aren't bothered with a tax man again, and the EBTs, the tax man's won his appeal against them. It shows you how poor Scottish football has got, that all we've got is the fun between Celtic and Rangers fans on social media. But we will take a look at the Champions League. English clubs in action this week. Mixed fortunes. Not so great if you're Arsene Wenger. We'll also take a look at domestic matters too. Scottish League, English League, and everything else. I'm off next week, but we'll be discussing that later on with Dennis and Andy. A visit to Amsterdam beckons, as long as the Fenerbahce supporters have left something for me to go and see. But as always, it's the man to my right. It's the one, the only, the inimitable. He's got his pen ready for a click. It's Dennis Newham. How are we doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
I'll tell you this much, that must have been one of the most boring. I really should start writing some of these things down, you know what I mean? But anybody listening, it will be a fantastic show, much better than what the introduction was.
We were only listening, it was that bad. And I think a lot of people will.
That's a good job. I've got a cup of coffee and a can of energy juice here.
Yeah, it's been a difficult week for Scottish football.
Yeah.
You know, we expect more, but I'm sure we'll expand into great depths about it.
Indeed, indeed. It has been one of these weeks where we have kind of struggled. It's been a bad week for Celtic. Obviously in Europe, domestically, league's done. Pretty much, we asked the question a few weeks ago, are Aberdeen the real deal? I think it's ultimately been proven they're not really. Consistently, they're going to struggle to live with Celtic over a season. They may well beat them in a game or two, but over a season, it's going to be a struggle.
Without a doubt. We're just stating the obvious, to be honest. You've got a gulf there in money spend. You've also got the debt and depth in squad, although you wouldn't think it when Celtic play in Europe. But as far as Scottish domestic scene is, Celtic are miles away.
Yep.
And if, you know, I watched the game last weekend, and Celtic were outstanding. And whether it was because my favourite midfielder that's desperately needing a good rest in Brown was left out. I hope that's a can of Coke you've just prized the ring there.
No, a wee can of energy juice there. Give us a little boost.
So, you know, with Scott Brown being left out, I thought the tempo of the game was lifted. I thought there was more through balls behind defenders. I felt the midfielders were going past the defence. And all round, I thought Celtic looked very, very good last weekend. And up to the second half of last night, again, it was a fresh looking side and they looked not too bad, but they have got major problems.
Yeah, in Europe, Andy. Thanks for joining us tonight, by the way. I suppose I better do the introductions as well.
Thanks, Gilly.
Joined as always by Andy Mullen.
Thank you.
As Dennis says, in Europe, they're really, really struggling. It's not a particularly strong group. Ajax, they're doing not bad in the Eredivisie. Fenerbahce, where did that one come from? Also in the group, but Molde last night, that's home and away. They've given Celtic a drubbing.
I think people have got to realise, especially people in Scotland, the Celtic fans, I've said this on numerous occasions, Cammy, that in Scottish football, Celtic are well in front of everybody. But when it comes to European terms, what Celtic are doing to teams in Scottish football, That's what's happening to them in European football. Miles behind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Celtic fans have got to realise that they are well, well behind in European terms. Mould is a, what you would say, I would never be disrespectful and say they're a poor team. They're an average European team who are better than Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line.
And the fact that they're better than Celtic over two games has secured their qualifications in the next round?
Oh, without a doubt. But the way it is, Celtic have still got two games and possibly, be a miracle right enough for them to qualify if they win their two games, win at home against Ajax and then the return leg at Fenerbahce.
Mm-hmm.
But hypothetically, can it be done? Yeah, it can be done. But even if they get by that, they'll not go any further.
No.
Don't want to like sound total negative, but they're not good enough. No. Not good enough at all. And at the end of the day, Celtic and Ronnie Dyla will be judged primarily on Europe.
Yeah.
Because in the Scottish scene, I said before, us three sitting here, any of us three could manage Celtic, and you would deserve losing your job if you couldn't win the Scottish Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the league as we sit here and trying to analyse it last night after it. Celtic's no necessarily dead and buried in this if they can get their act together. The first 45 minutes last night, just a wee bit rubby the green with a bad linesman. It might have been two up in 10 minutes, but the decisions were right, linesman was spot on. But in another day, Celtic were like lightning breaking into that box and finishing. So, you know, they could have easily last night I won that game quite convincingly in the first half. And I'm actually sitting there, which is one of the few occasions where I'm watching them thinking, see if they go a goal down. They've got it to go back and win this game comfortably. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what the manager's team talk was about or whether they just had a cup of tea and thought the game's done. But the second half was an absolute disgrace. And I think any Celtic supporter would agree with me. You don't need to be blinkered in any manner of means, but that performance must rate among the worst top 10 or top 5 performance of Celtic ever in a European tie.
They lost poor goals, but over and above that, Ronnie Dyla and his coaching staff have got a belief in how they play, and he only plays one way, 4-2-3-1. He will never change for that. Now, going forward, I agree, they'll create opportunities, but unfortunately, if you can't keep your back door shut, you'll not win games of football, unfortunately. And it's okay being on the front foot and playing lovely silky soccer, creating numerous chances and scoring goals. But if you're scoring and you can't keep them out the other end, you will not win games of football.
This does seem to be a problem, Dennis, that's haunted Celtic throughout Europe this season. You know, they've lost bad goals, we've blamed Ambrose consistently, you know. But Celtic, throughout Europe, Champions League qualification and through this Europa League as well, it's bad goals that has ultimately cost them.
Without a doubt, you know, you put a centre-half on to do a job after, what, 7 minutes, and he elected not to put Ambrose on.
Yeah, he actually took the boy back off.
And he took him back off. And he could have took him off 20 minutes earlier. He could have took him off after 10 minutes.
And as a football poor, player, you know yourself, Dennis, there's nothing worse than that, nothing more humiliating than actually come on as a substitute and then getting taken back off.
Andy, I've had that done to me.
But,
so I know exactly how the guy feels.
But you know what I'm saying?
Your
pride and everything.
That's right.
No, as I say, how did you recover for that at a club even like Celtic?
Well, it's not a live game or a massive crowd that means
no,
it's
but
at the same
still,
time.
Still the same.
You know, I can still remember it.
Yeah.
But that's down to the manager. He's obviously no good faith in Ambrose because he elected not to put him on. That tells you something.
Yeah.
One, is he going to pull a shirt on again in European ties? It looks like he's now forced down that road. And I think there's public demand that says we don't want Ambrose playing in that team. That's the first thing.
I think,
and he's went with that.
I would agree with what you said there. I think the public or the fan base has been strong, and the manager's thought, well, I'm not going to stick by him.
And what happens is you then are losing your own mind. And he put a youngster on there, and again we're back to the two big defenders at the back that were split apart. And to be honest, I've seen games in an amateur team defending better and better organised than that Celtic defence. The youngster at fullback was outstanding, and he's the only person I would really say got full pass marks in the game. But that it's that testament to what Celtic's all about. You've got a young guy cutting his teeth and he's outstanding.
But you go back to what John Collins said, they don't get tested enough in the Scottish Premier League. But the bottom line is, when you do get tested in the next level, they obviously can't handle that.
Right,
so that's telling you something, that they have to get better quality. If they deem their club Celtic as a club that's going to be in European football regular, then they have to get or identify better players that can go and play at that level of football.
But Andy, that's been the argument coming out of Celtic and Rangers for the last 20 years, well, give or take the last five, obviously, for Rangers. But, I mean, for the last 20, 25 years, it's been the fact that they don't get tested enough domestically. Part of the reason for that is they take some of the better players from clubs who are going to challenge them. They've done it consistently with Hibs. You know, they did it with the United.
But Cammy, without being cheeky here, they went and bought a player who Rangers were after.
Yeah.
Scott Allen, who was very highly thought of. Scott Allen, he wasn't even on the bench.
No.
I might be wrong on this, but I'm sure he wasn't even on the bench even against Aberdeen.
And that smacks a Celtic going
But I don't understand that. If you're going and buying, you know, people say they've got to settle in and you've got to get experience of playing at big clubs. The only way you get experience is being getting thrown in and going playing.
Yep.
In that type of atmosphere.
Yep, indeed.
And I wonder how Scott Allen has, I don't mean reacting, how his head is going about that. Because I'm sure, Dennis, if you're a player yourself, you would be saying, well, wait a minute, you've paid X amount of money for us. You've brought him to the club maybe 10, 12 weeks ago. So the settling in period is over now, Cammy, is over. And you would actually think, well, if he didn't think he was good enough for the European football, they would still be bedding him in the league games.
Yep.
But he's not even getting it. He's not even getting a sniff.
Well, he's certainly on the bench against Aberdeen, but he's not been called on. And, you know, you just say to yourself, well, what's he there for? I looked at Armstrong last night and I thought, he's only really a shadow of the player that he was at Dundee United. Now, I'm matching Celtic last night against a Norwegian team that is sitting sixth in their division, which says to me, they're no any better than, say, in my eyes, than a hard-working, what would you say, championship team. I don't think they're any better than that. You could go to Queen of the South, or you could even go down a bit and go to Dunfermline and look at these teams that are willing to graft. And when a guy that's 40 years of age can still be up on the goal line and tap it in, that says something as well. Celtic don't have that. They were lacklustre. They'd looked unfit. They had no motivation. The talent was there in the first half. It was there last Saturday. So where does it go? You can only look at one person if you have to point the finger and say, you're not getting this right. Or as you rightly said, Cammy, there's two people involved. And we'll say John Collins sits in the background there. I don't know what he's doing. He's never out there on that touchline forcing and urging them on. And they seem to believe that Scott Brown's missing. You know, to me, they're just a washout, isn't it? And it's a shame because, as I repeat, last weekend's game, the first half of the game, I'm thinking, I've turned the corner a wee bit. And it was just a pack of cards. You think you'd sent out a different 11 in the second half. They were just shambolic.
Well, certainly last week I caught some of the Celtic-Aberdeen game and I was very, very impressed.
Great.
With how Celtic were. Going forward, they were absolutely fantastic. You know, as you say, breaking forward at speed. The only surprising thing was that it took them to just before half time, obviously, to break down a kind of dogged Aberdeen defence, and that was a game between the top two, you know, and that looked like a game between a side comfortably at the top of the SPL or comfortably at the top of their game, the top of the league, and a middle of the road championship side. That's how they made Aberdeen look last week. I thought they looked fantastic, but to say they're not challenged and to use that as an excuse, to me it doesn't hold water now. It didn't hold water 25 years ago, 30 years ago, Andy. And Celtic are looking for excuses as to why they're not performing well in Europe. They're not performing well in Europe because either the players aren't good enough, or, as we say, Dennis, the management structure of Ronnie Dial and John Collins isn't good enough.
Well, if you start with where we think it's broken, is it goes back to something that's not really Celtic's fault then. We look at the rest of Scottish football. Now, the man sitting next to me now is really well versed to answer this because I've not been at that level. But Andy, you tell me, if you're taking St Mirren out in the good old days when you were competitive in the Premier League, why you would go to Parkhead, or they would come to St Mirren Park or Love Street at the time, and you would crumble. Yet you might have two or three runs. Why?
I can go back 10 years ago, this season when St Mirren won the championship 2005-2006. And I remember the first season going into the Premier League, and I was fortunate enough to play a wee bit in it. And I go back to, I can mention Hibs team, because Hibs for me, even though Celtic and Rangers were very powerful, but Hibs was the best footballing side in, underneath Tony Mowbray. And they're forget the goalkeeper, but they're 10 outfield players. Was Whittaker right back, two centre backs was Cobble and Jones. Left back was Murphy, David Murphy, that he brought up from Middlesbrough. In the middle area, they had three in the middle. It was Scott Brown, Thompson, and Bouzelin. And across the front, it could be anything from Ryden, O'Connor, Chris Killen, Zamama, Shields. There was about five or six players. You know, that's just the Hibs team. But what I'm going to get back to is, and I don't want to sound this as if it's negative about Scottish football, but there is a decline in the standard of the quality of the player. Even your Celtics and your Rangers were tough to play against. Hearts as well. You had Romanoff spending big money. Aberdeen, your Dundee United. And if you want to see your smaller teams at that time, was a St Mirren, was possibly a Kilmarnock, was possibly a Motherwell that were all in that wee mini league. And you also had a time when Hamilton and Gretna had come up.
Yeah.
But the standard of the top sides were very, very strong. And the biggest thing that's happened is it'd be Rangers coming right out of the league, going to the bottom of the league. The money is completely gone in terms of Rangers going to these places, their fans putting in the money into the clubs. They've not got that anymore. Not at the moment anyway. I know you've got Celtic, who probably took their eye off the ball in terms of knowing that they're going to win the Premier League every season, so they're guaranteed that X amount of million qualifying for the Champions League for the short term. But I wouldn't say that they've, if you want to say, speculated to accumulate. What they've done is they've went round Europe and tried to pick a cheaper option or a rough diamond to maybe bring that in, like say somebody like a Van Dijk and that, sell it on for a profit. But that'll only go on for so long, and even that'll dry up. But the standard of our game for the top, I mean, the top is suffering, it dilutes all the way down.
Yeah, but what I can't understand is Aberdeen are going great guns, Hearts are going great guns, and then they play Celtic and they crumble. Now, their quality of players, when I look there, when we were talking about the lineup Scott Allen was in, I looked at the lineups and had a look at that Aberdeen team. That Aberdeen team, on paper to me, it's got better players than Mulder has. Without a doubt, Mulder's got two or three players that are nuggets and would do a lot worse than coming and playing maybe in our Premier League. And certainly nobody getting anywhere near the money, I say, Scott Brown or his colleagues will. But what I will say is, why is Aberdeen no going there and putting on a better show? Why are they no committing themselves the way that Mulder does? It seems to me, and that was a question to you, do Premier League teams go there and before they've actually got out the dressing room door, there's weaknesses within the rank that cause you to crumble? And I'm not talking about yourself, Andy, but it's a team. Is there two or three that have that doubt in their mind, oh, I hope we don't get a do in the day? Because that's the mentality that we have in Scotland.
What used to happen, that's talking personally, if you were going to Rangers and Celtic years ago, you always wanted to say that you could compete against them. If you were a player, the one thing you wanted to test yourself the best. If you're standing there as a coach or a manager, you've got to make sure that you're organised and hard. A lot of supporters don't enjoy that, but be hard to beat. But the one thing you don't want as a coach or a manager, and even as a player, you don't want embarrassed. So what you would say is, you're going into the place, and rightly so, there will be players will be saying, manager's only playing me one up today. We're going to get turned over. We're just going here to make sure that we don't get embarrassed. And possibly, going back to maybe turning the story again, you're talking about Mulder. Mulder's been fit. They're organised. And deep down, I know what you're saying about Aberdeen. Mulder's probably got better players in Aberdeen as well. Isn't he? In terms of, maybe no name-wise, Dennis, because we know the Scottish scene pretty well. the Aberdeen team, I would agree with you. If you look at Derek McInnes, I think he's recruited really, really well in his time at Aberdeen. When he's got the likes of, I know he's not playing as much now, Barry Robson, Flood, but he's recruited well even down south. But again, when you go into Europe, when you go in, when you look at what he's recruited, even Rooney, McGinn, Shinney that he got, McLean that he bought,
Hayes.
Jack Hayes. You know, there is quality there. Even at the back, Reynolds has come back in again. He went down to England, you got Logan, he's got Taylor. But there is quality there. But I always think, I never played in Europe. But personally myself, there's another golf again. There's another step up again.
But if you look at a comparison across the other side here, and you look at Rooney and Griffiths, there's not much between them, although Griffiths is an edge. You look at McGinn against, say, Armstrong or Forrest, McGinn's miles in front of Forrest. So if we go across and we play that, Shinney against Rogic, who are we going to pick? And we can go through that Aberdeen team on paper and know what they're capable of. And I'll tell you what, they're 7 out of the 11 are better equipped than Celtic players are, what we're seeing.
But what will happen is Celtic at Parkhead against a Scottish team, they'll be right on the front foot. As soon as the whistle goes, they will go right on the front foot. And the way, again, Ronnie Dyler, his beliefs, his playing is, he'll push his fullbacks on. He'll try and push the Aberdeen wide players or fullbacks higher up, and they'll try and dominate the ball. And that's what they do in Scottish football. But when it comes to the European game, trying to play the same way, that's where sometimes, and I don't, listen, Ronnie Dyler is the manager of Celtic Football Club, I'm not. But the difference is, when you go and play in Europe, I think you sometimes maybe go to be a wee bit more respectful in terms of the opposition you're playing against. And sometimes you're maybe too loose. I mean, they went to Mulder the first game and actually were trying to play the same way. Mm-hmm. And as I say, when the first goal came in against Mulder, you couldn't even see Izaguirre. He wasn't even in the camera screen.
But is that maybe the problem then? Has Scottish football maybe fallen so far behind even now Norway that we are not showing countries like that the respect that, not necessarily they deserve, but the respect that we should be showing them, because we are now at a stage where we're poorer than they are.
I think, Cammy, what's happened with Scottish football, and I know people want to be really positive with it. I think people have got to realise that the days of Scottish football qualifying, if it's a national team qualifying for World Cups and European Championships at the moment, are well behind. If you go into European terms, we're still well behind in terms of Scottish football, in terms of Norway, in terms of even Iceland, Sweden. These countries have all caught us up and probably overtook us at the moment.
But that's no down to money. It's down to mismanagement of each individual club. But I still believe that if our Premier League teams want to actually go and be successful, there's never a better opportunity on the back, especially Celtic's recent European results, to go out there on the Sunday when they're playing them and go for hell for leather in relation to getting a result out of it. Instead of this, as you've said, you become a bit tentative and you sit back a bit. They've got to approach these games as if they want to win them. No, get them all in. And I go back to this, and I use this all the time, self-preservation. Some of the managers need to be stop worrying about this, because that Celtic team are vulnerable. They can be good if they're allowed. And that's what Aberdeen done. They allowed them to be good, and therefore, that's what happens. Celtic will run over the top, and they've done it throughout this season and last in the Premier League.
Yeah. We're looking at results in the Premier League. We'll sort of move on there from the inquest from last night, because I think there's a much, much bigger problem that requires an awful lot more than the three of us round the table discussing it. You only need to look at even the facilities for kids in Norway and whatever else. But
we've already had an inquest from Mr. McLeish, and we've changed our league as well. So there's something. I think until you actually get football people actually at the top of the tree and making sense. I mean you've got people like Walter Smith, even Sir Alec Ferguson,
Craig Brown.
There's no reason why these people shouldn't be at the top of the tree trying to change their game. And remember, I think some people forget this, that when they people were coming through either playing or even managing in the 70s and 80s, we were successful as a country, as a nation, and even our clubs were successful. So whatever we're doing at the moment maybe isn't working, can we? And possibly people like that trying to make decisions and help my clubs go forward, that possibly would help.
Yep, certainly couldn't hinder things anyway. But as we say, looking at results last week in the Premier League, as we say, Celtic comfortable winners, 3-1 at home to Aberdeen. Bit of a surprise result in the late fixture, Dundee United 1, Ross County 0. Hamilton 2, St Johnstone 4. If ever there's a side in Scotland that blows hot and cold that you can't even figure from 1 week to the next, it's St Johnstone. Cali Thistle 1, Dundee 1. Killie 0, Motherwell 1. And result of the day is Partick Thistle 0, Hearts 4. A result of the day anyway if you're a Hearts supporter. And that leaves the change in the leagues now. Celtic 6 points clear of Hearts at the top. Aberdeen a further point back. Then it's St Johnstone, Ross County and Hamilton falling off the pace. Dundee United still propping up the table. Partick Thistle, Motherwell, Inverness, Kilmarnock and Dundee, as we say. Moving into other results in the Scottish Cup, some of the replays. So Forest Mechanic going down 3-2 at home to East Kilbride. Turriff United 2, Fraserburgh 3 and Wick Academy 5, Nairn County 1. Championship results last week. On the Saturday, it was Alloa 1, Queen of the South 2, Dumbarton 1, Morton 2, Falkirk 3, St Mirren 0, a result which saw Alex Miller come in as the assistant to Ian Murray, and Livingston. We had a couple of good results last week, in the last couple of weeks, but it was they were 3-0 victors at home to Raith. And on a Sunday, Rangers 100% record came to an end at Easter Road, as Hibernian ran out 2-1 winners. Comfortable, and it was an exciting, enjoyable game. And that leaves Rangers 5 points clear of Hibs at the top. Alan Stubbs winning manager of the month as well. Falkirk in third place. Raith Rovers fourth. Queen of the South fifth. Alloa tromping up the table. You've got Dumbarton 5 points ahead. St Mirren in eighth. Livingston, their recent run, as I say, 6 points from the last two games. Morton just above them. So a bit of a shock, ultimately Rangers going down and the 100% record going, but maybe their performances the last two or three weeks has shown that they can be caught, Andy.
Yeah, it just shows you that how well Hibs are doing. Hibs are on a fantastic run, playing with a lot of positivity and a lot of confidence. And then, was it such an upset? I don't think it was, Gary, because I don't think there's much of a difference between your Hibs and Rangers. Two teams that will certainly be vying for the championship. I still believe Rangers in the longer term will win the league, but certainly at the moment Hibs are in a rich vein of form. And again, to be fair to Rangers, that's the first game they've lost in the league, so it's not a bad record. And Alloa go to Ibrox tomorrow, which I wouldn't say that I wouldn't fancy being an Alloa player going out to Ibrox tomorrow, because I would expect a reaction from Rangers, Dennis.
Yeah. Well, everybody thinks that because you hear of betting odds that go on, and the betting odds for Alloa to win tomorrow is 20-1. I've never experienced that in any team. That's like playing some team for Iceland that's just been thrown together, or from Norway. But I don't know. Alloa will struggle tomorrow. But I think Rangers have got too many youngsters on their team. I think they're okay at this moment in time. I've watched their games as well. I think they're quite slick. They've got good work ethics. But I tell you what, Andy, the only thing I think he'll need to build on is get a spineyest team with experienced players.
Again, Mark Warburton's got a belief in how he plays. He'll play a back four. He plays a three in the middle, and he's got three up top, one right through the middle, and two that keep their width all the time, and their two fullbacks get bombed on. Again, at this level of football, most games he'll dictate how he gets played on the front foot. Again, once you start going up the levels, I don't know whether or not they'll get away with that all the time.
They've got flaws, like Celtic having their central defence, there's no doubt about it. And I think Hibs showed they were more men than the Rangers team were boys, and I think that's how that game really panned out for me when I was watching it.
Yep.
But a great result again for Hibs.
Yeah.
Quarter final as well, 3-0 against Dundee United.
Dundee United, yeah.
Brilliant. They've done really well.
It's good for that Scottish Championship that Rangers aren't blistering away, whereas you've got Hibs have paid them back a wee bit, and it makes it interesting as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, five points of a difference here at the top. Had Rangers won that at the weekend, you're looking at 11 point difference. So it does maintain a bit of a excitement almost in a league where, as you say, Rangers are going to win it, and Hibs will probably finish second.
I think if that had went to 11, Cammy, I always, in the football world, I would always say, I don't count the points, it's like a four game swing.
Yeah.
And for Rangers to go and lose four games, I don't see them doing that. Mm-hmm. No. I really don't.
In all honesty, I don't see them losing another two either, even against Hibs. Yeah. You know, so I think it's still going to be very difficult for Hibs to peg them back.
Hibs have got a difficult game tomorrow. They're playing St Mirren.
Yeah.
And again, coming off two great results, one against Rangers and one against Dundee United, it'll be interesting to see again if they can lift that again. Three games in 7 days, can they go and lift that and do the same as what they've done the last two games? Because that'll be a tough game for them at the new St Mirren Park.
Yeah, St Mirren, as we say, with the new assistant manager, Alex Miller, obviously a Hibs legend in many ways, you know. So be interesting to see how that goes tomorrow. I would probably expect Hibs still to get the points from that one, but St Mirren will make it difficult for them, Dennis.
Well, Alec Miller's the type of people I always keep saying we lose to the game. You know, the older statesmen, we've talked about Craig Brown, Alex Smith, people like that, that we really want to see coming back in and working behind the scenes when you've got a young manager in place. Whether that is how this has worked out, I don't know, but I wouldn't like to be the manager at St Mirren now.
I know Alec Miller,
looking over my shoulder.
He did... have the, I don't know whether it was good or bad that he signed me for Hibs.
That's right.
And I worked underneath Alec for two seasons, and in terms of the coach wise, you'll not get anything better. Very, very thorough, knows the game inside out.
That's right.
And will be a massive, massive help to St Mirren.
You're looking at a man who was part of a Liverpool side who did well in Europe as well. He was also
part of the last time our country was in a national tournament, European Championships in 1998 down in England, and he was there.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying, that wealth of experience, you need the players as well, of course, you just can't be a magician altogether, you know.
And I think that's the problem at St Mirren, they will be organised. So much experience.
The one thing he's very good at, very good at organising his teams, and they will be very, it'll be a close game tomorrow.
I mean, that's it's all one, obviously, the conspiracy theorists, etc., will be looking at what that does for Ian Murray. Been having a couple of conversations with Ian Murray during their text exchanges during the week with Ian. He was going to come on tonight, but he has promised to come on at some point over the next couple of weeks. So we'll get Ian Murray on to discuss things at St Mirren. But as I say, the conspiracy theorists will be wondering what's happening there. But in terms of a young manager, to bring in a bit of experience like that, there's no better figure in the game than Alex Miller to bring in to learn from, if you like, if you're Ian Murray.
Definitely not, and that's what I've been saying all along. Been saying it for years, and the people like Alec Miller are a loss to the game, and I think the role that he's probably and should be doing is perfect for him. Yeah. As long as you say, well, what's the agenda behind it? You know, let's see how St Mirren go on, and if they too work as a good team, then why can it not continue and make St Mirren a very successful team?
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. Well, moving away from the Championship and again looking at the fixtures last week, I think the last few weeks, Dennis, we've struggled to cram everything in. We haven't really looked at the results in Scottish football or English football or any kind of football. We've had so much other stuff to talk about. But last week, as I say, in the League One, it was Airdrie 1, Albion Rovers 1. Albion Rovers' form this season so far continues to be very, very impressive in that league. And that's not a bad result at all, going to the Shibre and getting a point. Air United 3, Stranraer 1, Ian McCall's men continuing to lead the league. Cowdenbeath 0, Dunfermline 0, Fife Derby. Cowdenbeath have lost a lot of goals in games leading up to that, so they've obviously made big changes and kept it tighter at the back. Forfar 0, Brechin 1, and Stenhouse Muir 4, Peterhead 3, 7-goal thriller there at Ochil View. As we say, Air United, they're a point clear of Dunfermline. Albion Rovers are in third. What a fantastic season they're having after a dozen games to be in a playoff spot. Airdrie in fourth. Then it's Forfar, Stenhousemuir, Peterhead, Cowdenbeath, Stranraer and Brechin City still at the foot of the table. But they're starting to pick up a couple of points now and again there.
Yeah, but Albion Rovers have got Cowden Beath tomorrow.
But
and to me, that should be a banker for them.
Just going on about Albion Rovers there, you're talking about a young manager and somebody with experience. Derek Young lost Sandy Clark to Dunfermline, mm-hmm. and he brought in somebody I know very well, Billy Stark, in terms of his wealth of experience.
Yep.
And again, helping out with Derek Young playing as well. He's playing and managing. You've got Billy Stark on the side, plus you've got a group of players who've been used to winning, yep. coming up for another league, and they've continued that this season. They've done very, very well so
yeah.
far.
Brilliant. Delighted to see it.
Yep, done a fantastic job there, that's for sure. And if Albion Rovers were to finish in that position at the end of the season, what a boon that would be for them at Clifton Hill. Could you imagine Clifton Hill as a championship stadium next season?
That's the San Siro. Don't knock it, it's the San Siro. That's the nickname of it. Yeah. San Siro.
Yeah, something like that anyway.
7 years there, and I don't know how much sellotape's used to hold it together.
Yeah, and moving in finally, as we do a round-up of last week's results. In League 2, it was East Fife 0, Annan Athletic 1, Elgin City 2, Arbroath 0, Montrose 4, Berwick Rangers 1. They've turned things around from a side who looked as though they could well drop out of the league altogether.
I don't
Montrose
know.
Montrose have turned things around.
Did you look at the Scottish Cup result?
Right, beyond that, but let's be honest, they're wanting to concentrate on league matters this season.
I mean, they've got beat with Lothian Thistle 2-1. Is it Hutchin Vale?
Hutchin Vale, more than Thistle.
Yeah. 2-1. And I thought to myself, what's happening at Montrose? And then you see, wait a minute, they just gave,
that's
Berwick
right,
a rate going
Berwick
over. And Berwick's appointed John Coughlin as their manager now.
Yep. I hadn't even realised somebody'd moved on. That's about his third spell there, certainly. Second spell, definitely.
His last spell, he won the championship, he won the League 3. The old League 3.
Yep. Yeah, he'll be comfortable there.
Yep.
Indeed he will be. Queen's Park 1, Clyde 1. Sorry, I've just got a text message through telling me Nottingham Forest are beating Derby 1-0. And Stirling Albion 0, East Stirling 0. And that leaves the league looking as, say, Annan Athletic 5 points clear of Montrose at the top. Then you get East Fife, Elgin, Queen's Park, Clyde, Berwick Rangers, Arbroath, Stirling Albion and East Stirling at the foot of the table there. And I think we've already discussed as to the side finishing bottom this season could really be up against it in terms of retaining their league place. And at the moment, Shire are struggling at the foot of the table, losing a lot of goals, 24 goals already this season in 11 games, Dennis. They are losing a lot of goals. Conversely, Stirling Albion, they're not scoring many, but they are a difficult side now to beat, and they're keeping it very tight at the back.
Yeah, East Stirling need to have a right shake-up, otherwise they're really going to have that trap door. It's been threatening for, 10, 15 years now. I mean, obviously it's only kicked in that you go out of the division. But as I keep saying, if you go out of this division, and Montrose were lucky last year to stay in it, where do you go?
Yep.
You know, you're then back into a situation where there's so many good teams now that are, we'll call it non-league football, if you want to call it that, with the Lowland Leagues and even the Highland League, they're all chapping at the door now.
Very, very, very strong. I mean, the money I think some of these Highland League sides are paying their players this season is absolutely frightening, you know, and it's no surprise some of the guys, like Sir Stuart Kettlewell, and some of the guys coming to the end of their career, have maybe been at Ross County, Inverness, etc., are choosing to stay up there in the Highland League.
You only have to look at what happened to Clyde 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They played the team, form team.
Yeah.
You know, and the quality of player that they've got. You know, they will be paying good money up there.
Uh-huh.
And that wasn't a surprise to me. It's a difficult game going up there.
Difficult game, but as I say, I think as you were saying before we came to air, I think it was the manner of the defeat that really alarmed Clyde supporters. The fact that Clyde went up there and didn't a shot in goal or a shot in target.
Yep.
And on the back of the Stirling Albion game the week before, where again it was the same scenario, I think that's what's alarming a lot of Clyde fans. But as I say, I did a Clyde special last week, and for my week before my sabbatical, I really don't want to focus on Clyde tonight.
But going back to East Stirling, the team that goes out of the league this year, it's getting closer now.
Yeah,
and there will be, whether it be sooner rather than later, there will be a so called professional part time or semi professional team that will go out of the league. There's no doubt, because there's teams like Cumbernauld Colts, they're building up ahead of steam, even in the Scottish Cup, they've qualified for the next round of the Scottish Cup.
Yeah.
So, It'll not be long.
You know, go back to it, because you did get into it in depth last week. Clyde didn't lose much ground with that result last week. And if you look at it again, they've got Montrose. If they can beat Montrose, they can go up in the second spot, which seems absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these leagues. I did say at the start of the season I didn't fancy Clyde to win it. I thought to East Fife, I mean, they're not doing me so great. But you look at the form of Annan, since Clyde beat them 4-2, they've went from strength to strength, and the backside's fallen out of Clyde's season. You know, it just shows you how one result can throw a sort of schedule, almost a league programme, throw results out the window.
Yeah, and you look at East Stirling, what was that? 6 results they had, didn't pick up anything.
Yeah.
And then they went victory, draw, and all they need, and believe it or not, they're sitting there on 10 points, is 1-1. 2 results, 2 victories, and they're into the middle of the pack again, and the pressure's off them. That's the difficulty. When you look at this, we can dismiss teams and think, oh, look how low they are. And it's not us really dismissing them. It's the fear. We don't want anybody to be going to the lower divisions. Not that we've anything against them, but we like this as we see it at this moment in time. Now, whether we call that competitive football or not, only time will tell when one of your teams do drop out and they're competitive enough to come back up again. That's what I want to see. I don't want to almost see like a third Lanark scenario where teams disappear off the face of the earth.
But the thing we've got here, Dennis, is we don't have... It's all one saying, well, we're looking at a pyramid system and trying to bring sides into Scottish football. You look at down south, they've got the... I think it's now called the National League, you know, as the conference as we once knew it. You know, that's where a side falling out of the professional leagues in England goes to, you know, goes straight into that conference, and I think you've got the opportunity there to bounce back. If East Stirling were to fall out of the league, where would they go? You know, because you're looking at it could well be a Highland League side, it could be a Lowland League side, you know, that comes in to replace them. So I don't think that the pyramid structure is quite as well organised in Scottish football, you know. And if East Stirling Albion or whoever it was that was to fall out of the league, you know, it's not quite as cut and dried, and the chance to reinvest or whatever else to get the squad back into the league.
Well, they don't have their own park, so it's not as if they're getting revenue where they can grow. I think East Stirling's probably still living on the back of when Rangers were in the division.
Yeah.
And I think maybe a few of the teams will be a bit like that. But to me, they done no too bad last year. But I honestly believe that they haven't got enough to kick on.
No.
And generate enough funding to make them, what would you say, a challenging team in that division.
And I think that could well be the same for any side in that league. You know, in all honesty, if they were to drop out of the league, any side in the fourth tier of Scottish football, if they were to drop out, I don't think any of the sides there has enough about them to be competitive enough to get back up.
Queen's Park. Because they've always had that sort of amateur approach to it, where they can survive that way, and they've also got the facilities. But going back to East Stirling, they don't have their own pitch.
No.
You know, they're ground sharing, so they're having to pay for that every week. So, you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul almost. Yeah. It's not like Stenishmuir, who are getting the revenue from East Stirling and the pitch being rented out. I just wonder where East Stirling see themselves in 3 or 4 years. There was very little vision when I was there. It was survival week in and week out. They've had a wee flutter where somebody coming in and invested money for them, and it never took them to the next level. And now they've just dipped right back down again, because obviously it's fans that are actually running that now. And they've done a good job, by the way, and they're really committed, these people. But I just think that you need good business acumen with somebody that's going to fund them, and funding them is not really the answer when you don't have your own ground. I just don't know where to look and see how they can continue. The only thing I do hope they do is that they get on a wee run and get their cell back up in the middle of the park and regroup.
And it's not an issue.
No, correct.
Yep, indeed. Yep. Well, moving away from Scotland and looking at things down south, a quarter of an hour of the show left, we'll look at last week's results. In the Barclays Premier League on the Saturday, early game, Chelsea 1, Liverpool 3. Chelsea took the lead early on, but Stamford Bridge isn't the fortress it was when in previous years under Mourinho, and that's a good result for Jurgen Klopp. Crystal Palace 0, Manchester United 0. That was Man United's third game in a bounce without scoring. Man City 2, Norwich 1. Big story of that was two penalties in the last minute, or the last couple of minutes for Manchester City, which saw them get the victory. Newcastle 0, Stoke 0. I think that was a game even more boring than the Crystal Palace-Man United game by all accounts. Swansea 0, Arsenal 3. Watford 2, West Ham 0. West Ham at long last lose away from home, and probably Vicarage Road would have been the last place you would have expected that. And the performance of the day, we seem to say that every week, is West Brom 2, Leicester City 3. The job there that the Tinker Man has done is nothing short of astounding. I think every one of us predicted Leicester to be in the bottom three come the end of the season. They're sitting third in that table just now. Ranieri's done a fantastic job. Jamie Vardy's scoring for fun. You know, him and Mahrez, I think, have got 18 goals out of the 23 that Leicester City have scored this season. The thing is, if they can hold on to these two in the transfer window come the winter, goodness knows where they can go. But I don't think Leicester City are going to be in the bottom three come the end of the season.
I think he's done a great job. The one thing that he's done is he's not changed too much for what Nigel Pearson, the squad wise. And okay, you don't like seeing anybody losing their job. Nigel Pearson done a good job there. Mm-hmm. But again, the Tinker Man's certainly taken it over to another level. Yep. And at the moment they're really flying, and the players seem to be enjoying playing. When you see any of their interviews, they're always talking in a positive sense. Yep. Regarding the manager, which is very good.
If the Premier League had started last March and finished last weekend, Leicester City would be Premier League champions. You know, based on the form they've taken in the last 20 games or something like that. They've taken something like 40 odd points out of possible 60. You know, under obviously Ranieri and Nigel Pearson at the end of the season, where I think they only lost one of the last 12 under Pearson.
Their 10 league games, they've lost once to Arsenal 5-2, and that was back in September. You know, unbelievable. I haven't watched many of their games because I'm still picking and choosing, and I think it's get to the stage now where you need to start looking and tuning in to Leicester. Vardy up front to me is a revelation. He's my type of player. He always has been, and I think we don't have enough yet. You know, he's came through the ranks instead of this tattoos and whatever else you might be running about with, and the motors and everything else. I just think he's a tradesman who has worked his socks off, and I think that's what's missing in the game.
Well, 3 seasons ago or something like that, he was playing non-league football.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that, Cammy. I think it's a great story for any young player. It just shows you that if a club's willing to give you an opportunity, mm-hmm. and trust you and bat for you, then you've got a chance. And it just shows you that down there, and I'm sure it's the same in Scotland, there will be players out there that are just needing a wee break somewhere. And fortunately for the lad Vardy, yeah, he got the break, but he's had to work really, really hard to continue that, and he's got a fantastic work ethic.
That's the one thing about him. You know, you're talking there about players nowadays wanting things handed to them in a play, and the level of expectancy for kids coming through the rank. Okay, Vardy's not a kid, and I think he realises he has worked hard for it, and is maybe he's actually due everything he's getting through the fact that he's worked so hard, you know. But
the biggest thing, last Saturday when the game finished, he was actually down on his knees. He'd run himself that much into the ground. He gave everything. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's all you can ask for as a player. And that's the biggest thing, to be fair to him. He's maybe technically not the best, but by goodness me, he makes more. Yep. His work ethic is incredible. Yep. Incredible. Defenders will hate that.
8 or 9 league games in the bounce where he's scored. You know, I think he's only 2 games short of beating Van Nistelrooy.
I think it's 8, Cammy.
8.
I think the record's 10. Van Nistelrooy's sitting 10.
But, you know, so
you've just said something there, Andy, which I think sometimes we get too engrossed in technically. I think players, if they're willing to work
ethic,
are what we're missing big time in the game. And they'll come back to it. And right at the start of the show, we're talking Mulder. And, you know, that's worth work ethics. That's not actually sitting there looking how technical they are. They all committed themselves. And that's where you get results. And in my days, people all around about me, they weren't the most gifted in the world, but I tell you what, we win games. And you win games because you're committed to the cause. And the opposition might have a few more skillful people, but if, but the bottom line is, if you're willing to run and compete, you will still get a chance and an opportunity.
The one thing that, again, working with underneath Tommy Burns, there's certain sayings that he would always say that stick in your head all the time. He would say that working, having a work ethic and working harder can hide a multitude of sins. And what he means by that is sometimes you might not be as gifted or blessed with the talent that somebody else has got, but if he isn't willing to work as hard as you, then you will always overcome that.
Yes.
And don't get us wrong, he's just got more than working hard, because I mean, he's even now putting himself into the international scene with England, which is fantastic. But it's a great story. When you see the standard and the amount of money that gets spent on, say, world-class players or people from Europe, and you see there's Vardy cost him buttons.
Yeah.
Buttons.
But even technically, you know, he's... The timing of his run on Saturday for the goal. But let's be honest, the ball through to him wasn't too bad either. But the timing of his run to get through, and even the finish, you know, to beat the West Brom keeper.
The one thing, Cammy, defenders dislike and don't enjoy is pace, especially when you're wanting to stretch you.
Yeah.
And pace being just spinning and going down the outside or whatever. Defenders do not enjoy that.
Yep.
Do not enjoy that, and that's the one thing you've been guaranteed when you're playing against him. See, if you're a centre back or you're one of the back four, you know you're going to win a game.
That's it.
She's not going to give you a minute's peace.
You're going to get a tour of time. And the one thing about the lad as well is, I don't think this, I get the feeling from listening to him and watching him, I don't think this record means a thing to him. You know, he's only interested in Leicester City winning games, you know, and if it's him that scores, great. If it's not him, well, brilliant. If he's there going to aid the team, then brilliant. And he's done a fantastic job, and credit to Nigel Pearson last season, and obviously credit to Ranieri this season for getting the best out of him.
Well, you only have to look at the man next to this. Dennis has been a manager, and I'm sure he would tell you, as much as you get frustrated maybe with players, the one thing he would always take in his team was somebody that he can trust and was willing to work for 90 minutes. Am I right, Dennis?
Oh, without a doubt. You need that in abundance, because certainly at the levels I've been, which is only the lower senior levels, is... you're not going to be able to afford talent. So therefore, what you've got to do is get people that are committed to the cause. Yeah. And the old saying is, run through a brick wall for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get that, you can happily stand at the side of the park and think, that's good, enjoy that.
Quite happy.
Yeah. Yep. But if you go back to Leicester, they've still to come up against the big guns bar Arsenal. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just running through that. West Ham, Bournemouth... then you've got Aston Villa, I think I've played them twice, Stoke, Arsenal, Norwich, Southampton, Crystal Palace, West Brom. So they've not got the big guns in there yet. So I think, you know, it's better to have them in the bag, as Andy always says, and that's what they've done. They've got the points in the bag, whereas the other ones are floundering.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to see them up there, and it'll be a right tester when we see them up against the Man Cities and Man United and... you know, that kind of level.
That's it. I mean, the thing is, they're obviously a confident side, so with confidence, who knows what can happen. But looking at other results, on the Sunday last week in the English Premier League, Everton 6, Sunderland 2. Big Sam struggling. I think he's had 2 defeats in the 3 games, but obviously Sunderland, if they beat Newcastle one more time, they get to keep them. And obviously Allardyce was the latest in a long line of Sunderland managers who manages to beat Newcastle on their debut. And Southampton 2, Bournemouth 0. I think Bournemouth were giving a drubbing and a bit of a football lesson in the first half, but second half, they came into the game more but didn't do enough to score. And that leaves the league there. Man City and Arsenal both top on 25 points. Leicester City in third place on 22. Man United, Spurs, who are now 10 games unbeaten under Pochettino, and West Ham, as we say, who lost their first away game last weekend against Watford. And at the foot of the table, Aston Villa continue to prop up the table, although they've now appointed Remy Gard. Just what you need, you know, when you're struggling as a guy with absolutely no experience of the English game. Credit to Randy Lerner for that appointment, well done. Sunderland, Newcastle and Eddie Howe's Bournemouth in 17th, Chelsea sitting 15th place below the likes of Stoke, Swansea, West Brom, Crystal Palace and Watford. And they are struggling, although obviously perhaps they might take a wee bit of heart from their midweek Champions League result. Looking at Champions League results, during the week. On the Tuesday night, we had Real Madrid beating Paris Saint-Germain 1-0 at home, and Shakhtar Donetsk 4-0 victors over Malmo. Group B saw Manchester United, I think they were booed at some points during that game, or certainly Van Gaal was booed, but they still got a 1-0 victory over CSKA Moscow, and PSV 2, Wolfsburg 0. Manchester United topped the table. Group C saw Astana 0, Atletico Madrid 0, Benfica 2, Galatasaray 1. Benfica topped that table. And in Group D, Mönchengladbach 1, Juventus 1, and Sevilla 1, Manchester City 3. I think Manchester City giving the Spaniards a bit of a football lesson in that one. And the tables there are, as I say, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain pretty much look home and hosed. Manchester United, PSV, Wolfsburg, or CSKA Moscow all could qualify from that one. Benfica and Atletico Madrid look as if they're going to be the sides going through from Group C. And in Group D, Manchester City look pretty much assured of getting through to the next round, following a decent qualifying campaign. On the Wednesday night in the Champions League, it was Barcelona 3, Batty 0, Roma 3, Leverkusen 2. That's Roma's first victory. Bayern Munich 5, Arsenal 1. Not the greatest of results there for Arsene Wenger, as we say. And Olympiakos 2, Dinamo Zagreb 1. Group G, as we say, Chelsea 2, Dinamo Kiev 1, Maccabi Tel Aviv 1, FC Porto 3. I think the most interesting thing about that was the fact that Jose Mourinho is still convinced his Chelsea side will win that group. And Group H saw Ghent get their first victory in Champions League with a 1-0 victory over Valencia, and Lyon go down 2-0 at home to 100% Zenit St. Petersburg.
If we put Ronnie Dylan and Mourinho in the same room, what one of them is going to eat their cell convinced that they are doing a great job? who's going to finish their cell first?
Yes, on that note, should we finish early?
They seem to delude themselves. I mean, Chelsea's in the wrong position, we know that, and they've got better players, but he's not getting them lifted either.
There's something wrong there.
Of course there is. It's major problems.
Yeah, the atmosphere doesn't seem right.
No.
But, chemistry.
I think that Mourinho has got better players there than the league says, but he's not going to win the league. There's absolutely no danger.
It was a Champions League group.
I know that's a group, that's what I was saying. Deluding himself with that one as well.
Yep, indeed.
And I don't know whether he's going to watch the game tomorrow. He says he's maybe going to go and wander around about the outside of the park.
Yeah, he's got a fancy hotel, I think, somewhere, you know what I mean? So let's see. He'll be sitting watching the game in his bathrobe and slippers.
He will be making the substitutions. I watched his interview today in Sky. He says, "Who'll make the substitutions? I will."
Fair enough.
I take responsibility for everything.
Let's be honest, that referee's going to have some job, or the fourth official, you know what I mean? What's he going to do? Be sitting in the... Is he going to be sharing a bathtub with Mourinho or something like that, you know?
He's only self to blame. You know, I looked at what the referees are arrogant as well. You get the combination of the two and it comes to a head. I think that they need to try and understand that's a man's makeup. And you know, I wouldn't say be lenient. I've said I don't like his style, but the bottom line is that's how he is. But the way the FA is going, they really want to drive him out of the country, and that's wrong.
Yeah,
there's other managers behaved in the same way, and maybe not as bad, but
that's
still
the,
similar.
That's the thing. Yep.
And nothing's been done to them.
Indeed. Anyway, that's us for tonight. We'll finish early, so as we definitely beat the wee man that says Revival FM. I'm not here next week, as I say. Dennis and Andy will be joined by Bill Anderson, possibly Gordon Parks, but as I say, I won't be here next week. Thanks very much to the two of you for keeping me company tonight. Enjoy the show next week. I'll be thinking of you.
Mm-hmm.
No, I won't. Good night.